the domino theory, where one country falls to communism, the next one will fall like a row of dominoes. And that was what was presented to the public. However, according to Zinn, that's not the entire truth, or even the truth at all. In 1963, Kennedy's Undersecretary of State, U. Alexis Johnson, speaking before the Economic Club of Detroit. What is the attraction that Southeast Asia exerted for centuries and the great powers flanking it on all sides? Why is it desirable and why is it important? First, it provides a lush climate, fertile soil, rich natural resources, a relatively sparse population in most areas, and room to expand. The countries of Southeast Asia produce rich exportable surpluses such as rice, rubber, teak, corn, tin, spices, oil, and many others. So as you can see, this is not the language that's used by President Kennedy in his explanations to the American public. He talked of communism and freedom. Now, August 1964, the next president, Johnson, uses the murky sediments of the Gulf of Tonkin incident off the coast of Vietnam to launch a full-scale war. As we recall, the Gulf of Tonkin incident was when, while on a routine patrol in international waters, the U.S. destroyer Maddox underwent an unprovoked attack. Later, it turned out that it was fake, that the highest American officials have lied to the public. And in fact, the CIA had engaged in secret operation attacking North Vietnamese coastal installations. So then, if there had been an attack, it would not have been unprovoked. So what happened after this attack? Well, afterwards, a broad congressional resolution passed unanimously in the House and with only two dissenting votes in the Senate, giving Johnson the power to take military action as he saw fit in Southeast Asia. And most people don't realize that 2 months before the Gulf of Tonkin incident, U.S. government leaders met in Honolulu and discussed such a resolution. So they discussed this resolution before something actually happened. And according to the Pentagon Papers, that public opinion on Southeast Asia was badly divided in the U.S. at the moment, and that therefore the president needed an affirmation of support. So, the resolution gave the president the power to initiate hostilities without the declaration of war by Congress that the Constitution required. And then the Supreme Court, which is supposed to be the watchdog Constitution, was asked by a number of petitioners in the course of the war to declare it unconstitutional. Again and again, it refused to even consider the issue. And Zinn states in his book, traditional history portrays the end of wars as coming from the initiatives of leaders. Negotiations in Paris or Brussels or Geneva or Versailles, just as it often finds the coming of a war response to the demand of the people. The Vietnam War gave clear evidence that at least for this war, the political leaders were the last to take steps to end the war. The people were far ahead. The president was always far behind. The Supreme Court silently turned away from cases challenging the constitutionality of the war. Congress was, as usual, years behind public opinion. So this is a clear example of when the government, without popular support, went and declared war on a country that was engaged in a civil war, and then the powers that are supposed to keep each other in check, the judicial, didn't challenge the constitutionality of it. The executive, which pushed force for it, and the legislative agreed with it. They didn't try to fight it. Whereas the people, again, were not in agreement with the government, and the government did what they wanted.